You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko just a mon talking o anau mai haere mai ki te wire mo tēnei rā, te rā tahi o whiringa anuku. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for today, Rāpere Thursday, the 1st of October. My name is Justin. Welcome to October. Joining me in the studio is James Tapp. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be in October. It's spooky season.
Spooky season. It's Halloween season. And most importantly, it's election season.
I don't know about you, but it stresses me out like nothing else.
Well, unlike you, James, I watched both debates and I managed to survive.
I mean, I did manage to watch both debates as well, though I do have to be fair, I did fall asleep during the US one and was struggling to keep awake during the New Zealand one. However, both of them had a lot to take in across the board.
Do you think the News Hub one has its merits, but it has its faults, but that can't be said for the American one because I don't see any advantages from that?
No, I mean, as there were some descriptions of it being called, like, what was it, like a dumpster fire inside of a pile of trash inside of other burning things, because I would be concerned if I was an American right now.
Everyone should be. I mean, they're electing the leader of the free world and you have to choose from one of them.
Correct.
Yeah. And hopefully our show isn't the same as the American presidential debate yesterday, because FIR Kinney coming up on the show today. James will be covering what our MMP system would look like. We have our regular chat with Justice Minister Andrew Little, and International Desk will be reporting on the current clashes between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Ha'ofakaro, you can get into touch with us throughout the show. You can do so by calling us on 0093879 or texting us on 5395. Ko wa e ware ware e ai ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene kororo anō hei pakihere rōkiro ki maroa ngā I te pai tukutuku o irirangi poho. Me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website. And now let's start on this beautiful day out there.
Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
This week I spoke to Justice Minister Andrew Little on another escape from managed isolation, and as well as Labour and National leaders Jacinda Ardern and Judith Collins saying at the News Hub debate yesterday they would like to see 4-year parliamentary terms. But I began by asking the Minister on the details of overseas voting, which is now open.
Yeah, so if you're overseas, providing you've been back in the country since the last election, you can vote, and you can. So you have to be on the roll. If you're not on the roll, you can enrol online, and then in terms of getting a vote, you can go online to download a ballot paper that you then have to scan and send back. So the process that you go through is. Assumes a low volume of voters comparatively. There's checks and balances in it to avoid voter fraud, and that's the way that operates. I know the questions have been raised about whether that could be extended more generally to allow anybody to vote sort of through an online process. The system that is set up to do it simply would not allow for hundreds of thousands of voters to vote in that sort of way, but it fits the relatively small population who live overseas and wish to vote.
So when they download the ballot paper, and how do they return it? Do they upload it online or mail it back to embassy or back to New Zealand or something?
They can mail it back to an embassy, or they can scan it and upload it and send it back to the Electoral Commission in Wellington.
Then moving on, I kind of want to talk about another escape from managed isolation, this time in Auckland, which someone scaled from stories down using used bed sheets and wandered in the Auckland city for 8 hours. So,
you know, I don't know the full details of it, apart from the fact that I've seen the news reports about a person having knotted bed sheets together and shimmied down from four levels. I think there's a lot more security around those managed isolation facilities than was the case previously, bearing in mind, however, they are not prisons, and bearing in mind that the vast majority of people who go there do not try to escape, at least through that sort of thing. It was a very dramatic step to take to try and get out of that sort of facility. And I think there's always that, the whole, right from the outset, bearing in mind that, you know, people aren't in a prison, they are being held and their freedom is being compromised, but the government officials have tried to do it in a way that doesn't make it feel like a prison facility. So no doubt there will be a review about what steps can be taken or could have been taken to prevent this particular incident. But there is a difficult balance to achieve between letting people know that they're in a facility for their own good and for the wider public health, but that they're not being detained in prison-like sort of facilities. Trying to protect against somebody shimmying four stories down is takes it to another level.
My final question for today is, both Jacinda Ardern and Judith Collins said they would like to see having a government of four-year terms instead of 3 years. I wonder, what do you think of this?
I know that comes up a lot, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. I just think that it should happen in the context of development of a written constitution. I think, we have one parliament, unlike many other Western liberal democracies, a unicameral parliament. We have MEP, which is sort of a bit of a check and balance on lawmaking, but that is all. But I would rather see us have a written constitution so everybody knows what the rules are, everybody knows how the system works, and on that basis you could justify extending the term of parliament.
Speaking of a written constitution, could the idea of becoming a republic come up if Labour is re-elected?
Well, that does come up occasionally, but I don't think there's a public appetite for it at this particular point. But having a written constitution doesn't entail being a republic. It just means everybody being clear what the rules are and how you get to enforce them. And I think that is a debate that we ought to be having.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little.
The Wire.
That was Justice Minister Andrew Little. And after our regular chat, I also asked Minister Little for our election coverage.
95 BFM News election coverage 2020.
Yes, I asked Minister Little on what plans Labour has in terms of their justice policy. Yesterday, during the debate, National leader Judith Collins raised some issues on gangs and the right of silence. And she said National will establish a specific police unit on gangs and revoke the right of silence. I know Labour hasn't announced its justice policy, but what do you think of what the National leader is proposing?
I'm deeply sceptical on both counts. I mean, when National was in government for 9 years, they ran down the police force. The number of police officers per head of population reduced under their watch. The gang problem, in the sense of rising gang numbers, started when they were there. They knew that gangs that previously were operating out of Australia were establishing a foothold in New Zealand, and they did nothing about it. Now, it is true that the number of gang members has increased in the last 3 years because of the proliferation of Australian originating gangs establishing in New Zealand, largely because of people who have been deported from Australia coming back here. We have grown the police numbers. The frontline police numbers are now 2,000 more than was the case 3 years ago. Part of what we're trying to do with the police commissioner is to establish dedicated organised crime capacity, and we've got that now. We're building that up to 700 police officers nationwide. That is helping us deal with the gang problem. All of that could have been started and should have been started under the previous National government. They didn't do anything. National is very good at talking a big game, but doing absolutely nothing. When it comes to the right of silence, that is, the right of silence in criminal justice area is enshrined in our New Zealand Bill of Rights Act. And to undermine that, to deal with that, is a huge step to take. Those protect the right of silence is a protection for the innocent. And tempting as it might be in the dreadful situations we have with abuse and murdering of children by family members, to undermine that right of silence, actually to do that would have implications way beyond the horrific situation that we're seeing with, you know, kids being murdered. Now, the reality is when it comes to children being abused and murdered, is the police have extraordinary powers of search and surveillance, which they can use, which they do use, and they are using, and we should be supporting the police to use those mechanisms as part of the investigations into those horrific crimes, but not undermining the rights of the innocent, which is what the National Party clearly wants to do.
I think the party mentioned at the last election that there is going to be a transformative criminal justice reform, and is the party going to continue that?
Yes, we are. We started it, and part of the start of it was to shift the dialogue, the public discussion, away from the harsh on crime nonsense and the lock more people up. That's why we had our Criminal Justice Summit in 2018, and the work that we've commissioned both from the Harpiteer group led by Chester Burrows, former National MP, plus the Māori group that produced their own report, plus the victims group that produced their own report, all of that came together and built this consensus to say, what we've been doing up to recently has not worked. It's not reducing victimisation, it's not reducing the amount of offending, and it's not helping offenders who could be helped to get off the offending track. So I'm confident there's been a change in public attitude, actually reflected in part in what the National Party is now saying in other parts of their justice portfolio, that we have to approach things differently. So that's why we've, just in the last year or so, we've put more money into the therapeutic courts like the Alcohol and Other Drug Court. We're working on the sexual violence courts, specialist courts like that, plus other courts that are dealing with people who have underlying health conditions or circumstances like homelessness, to stabilise their lives so that the things that have caused them to get into offending, we address those and get them off that offending track. You've got the work that John Davis is doing in corrections and Port Kaitangi program, which is supporting prisoners, those who have done their time, once they get out, to get into a stable situation, get into work, so that they don't have an impetus to go back into offending. That started in the last year. That is starting to pay dividends already. That's the stuff that's going to make a difference.
The Prime Minister said she wants to beef up hate speech laws. What would that include in the new laws that if Labor is re-elected?
We have the two principal laws we have dealing with hate speech. First, the Human Rights Act, and we have a criminal provision in that Act, Section 161, that criminalises the incitement of disharmony on grounds of race or ethnicity. We also have the Harmful Digital Communications Act, which deals with online hate speech. The gap in the law is in the Human Rights Act and that criminal provision I talked about. And although it criminalises incitement of disharmony in relation to race or ethnicity, it doesn't include inciting disharmony on grounds of religious belief or of sexuality. And we think those gaps need to be filled. Now, there are elements on the right, including the ACT Party and the New Conservative Party and some of those sort of fringe elements, who are trying to create a culture war to say, gee, trying to fill that gap is erosion of freedom of speech and all the rest of it. Unfortunately, those people, the ACT Party, the New Conservative Party and those others, what they actually want to do is preserve the right of people to continue with hateful expression, and to say things like, you know, we should be able to kill all the Jews or kill all the Muslims. That's the right that they're trying to defend. They don't say it in those terms, but that's actually what they mean. We think that is wrong, and we think that the criminal provision in relation to hate speech ought to include those other areas. You can criticise religions and criticise religious doctrine without engaging in hate speech, and you want to preserve that. You need to preserve every other ability to express unpopular opinions, even offensive opinions. But what you should never allow to happen is for others to go around and threaten and intimidate people just because of the colour they are, the religion they believe in or worship, or their sexuality. And we do have to get that balance right.
Decision 2020.
Cool, Andrew Little Terra. And that was Andrew Little talking to me about Labour Party's justice policy. Kei te whakarongo koe, ki te Wire Marunga Irirangi Poho. You're tuned into The Wire with me, Justin Wong, on 95 BFM. The time is up to 22 minutes past noon. We will go for a break. You're on BFM.
The beauty of the fleeting and the ephemeral is so last century.
95BFM's popular shows, features and interviews are available as podcasts on RSS and Apple.
You're listening to Totally Wired, the all-new music show. My name is Jess Boo.
Thanks for stopping by for the 95BFM Kids Show.
Welcome back, it's True Scott.
Greetings and welcome. This is the rhythm selection.
So this is one for the musical theatre nerds out there.
Welcome along to Thursday Drive with Johnny and Big Hungry.
And we will let you know about Drive Island, of course.
Never miss out again. Becast, available on Apple Podcasts. Podcast or RSS for whatever podcatcher you're into.
This October, Fear is transforming the Hollywood Theatre Avondale into Horrorwood. Lots of sneak peekaboos, including St. Maud and Sputnik, plus screenings of the classics Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Friday the 13th, A Nightmare on Elm Street, Scream, Cat People, Slumber Party Massacre, and John Carpenter's The Fog, presented in glorious 4D Fogorama. And that's just the beginning. Horrorwood, October 1st to the 31st. Tickets and the full program at hollywoodavondale.nz.
Yes, I am. The rhythm selection. Every Monday night from 9 till 11. Dubbing and Disselectors playing the full range of ghetto sound. Yeah, man. From rock steady to roots reggae. Bebop sound to hip hop. Dub style to the latest dancehall vibes. Yeah, man, the rhythm selection. Boy, the rhythm selection. The rhythm selection. Boy, from 9 to 11 and 95 FM. Dobe dam ye selectors, the rhythm selection.
Yeah. 95 BFM News Election Coverage 2020. Environment.
Welcome back to The Wire. This week, our election coverage is on the environment. And the Labour Party has not announced any policies on it yet, but I asked Labour MP Andrew Little on what it would look like. I know the party hasn't officially announced the environment policies yet, but is there any idea on what it will look like?
Well, I mean, in terms of what we've been able to do in the last 3 years, I mean, I think the Resource Management Act is the principal piece of legislation that allows government, both local and central, to manage environmental issues. We've looked at a reform of that. We've done an interim measure which allows, for the purposes of the economic recovery because of COVID, large-scale projects to be consented very quickly or to be coordinated and consented centrally. We've allowed that to happen. We're also undergoing a more thoroughgoing review of the RMA to make sure that at least there's some consistency in the application of rules. It's very important that environmental safeguards are in place when decisions are made about development, but equally the kind of river that has emerged where all local authorities have different processes and procedures to comply with the Act causes some confusion. So there's that going on. In terms of specific areas, we know water management is a critical area. David Pike has done some excellent work on that in terms of water quality standards. We've improved and we've established regulations for way better water quality standards than was the case under the previous government. We're working with the farming sector to make sure that, you know, their ability to comply with that is consistent with their ability to farm safely and effectively. You know, farmers, I know, typically are suspicious about more regulation, even though they have an interest in better water regulation. But there's a good, productive and constructive relationship being established with that sector to ensure that that happens. So, look, all those things are working to lift our environmental performance because we desperately need to.
95BFM News Election Coverage 2020. Environment.
That was Andrew Little talking about the Labour Party's environment policy. Unfortunately, the party hasn't officially announced its policy on agriculture, on the environment yet, but we will bring you that once it is announced. And now.
And I wish some of your dozy mates in the media had got a fix on their job and started being reporters and journalists, not editorialists and analysts, which they're not qualified to do. Prison company accepted, of course.
The Wire.
And now, James, you want to talk to us about MMP?
Yes, so as part of some coverage on making sure that you, as our listeners, understand what you're getting into when you go to vote, last week we looked at the referendums, and this week we're going to look at the MMP system. With 16 days now until New Zealanders vote, there is a lot of new voters who have turned 18 since the last election, including myself, as well as those who are deciding to vote for the first time. And it feels somewhat ironic that I'm the one who is doing this report. However, having talked to many others who are voting for the first time this year, there is some confusion on what you are actually ticking boxes for and writing when we go to vote. So currently in the New Zealand Parliament, there are 120 sitting MPs, which is what we vote for. For someone running to get into Parliament, they can get in by two ways, either by representing their electorate or getting in as a list MP as part of their political party. So when you go to vote, there are four things you will decide on. Firstly is the party vote, which puts your vote towards a party which you want to represent you in Parliament. Then there is the electorate vote, which puts your vote towards a candidate which you want to represent the area which you live in. And then there are the two referendums which we covered last week. However, just because you have voted for a party or a candidate does not mean that they will be in Parliament or that party will be in Parliament. For a party to be present in Parliament, they can either win 5% of the party vote, which is 5% of everyone who votes in our election. If they get 5%, they will have presence in Parliament, or they can win an electorate seat. In our last term of government, we saw that both the Green Party and New Zealand First hit above 5%, however won none of their electorate seats, while the ACT Party won the Epsom electorate, making David Seymour their lone representative, however they did not hit 5%, while National and Labour both had a mix of getting large party votes and having some electorate votes as well. Now in Parliament there are 71 electorate seats, which cover the whole country, with the rest of the seats being for list MPs. When Parliament is formed, these list seats are used to make sure that the Parliament is proportional to the number of party votes each party has received if they have hit this 5% threshold or have an electorate seat. It is important to remember and consider that unlike other countries around the world, New Zealand does not have a first-past-the-post system. This system is based off the idea that whoever has the most votes wins. Now, in New Zealand, just because you have the most votes does not mean that you will govern. Instead, parties can either form coalitions or confidence and supply agreements. By forming a coalition, two or more parties will join forces to form a government, which is what we've seen in the last 3 years. While National had the most votes last election, which would have won in the first-past-the-post system, Labour, Greens and New Zealand First managed to form a coalition which had the majority of seats in Parliament. Under an MMP, we've not yet seen a political party govern alone with a majority government in the first-past-the-post system. However, we have seen minority governments formed with confidence and supply agreements being made, one of those being John Key's government in the 2014 election. So as we build up to the election day, if you're wanting to make sure you know what you're voting for and make sure you do your research, not only look at what particular parties stand for, but also your local MPs, because some of your local MPs will be standing for particular issues or be spokespersons on particular issues that you might be interested in. Yeah. So look not only at what particular parties are standing for, but your local MPs. And if you go to the elections website, it also covers everything that I've talked about today. And if you need a refresh or want a visual form on how it all works, it's all there. Go vote.
Cheers, James. And yeah, do remember to go to vote on October 17th, which is 16 days away.
Yeah. I mean,
2 weeks, a little bit more.
Yeah. Especially young voters. We're still seeing a lower turnout in young voters. And I mean, got to make our voice heard. Everyone in this country should be making their voice heard. Everyone has a right to know how our country is run.
And do you know what? Actually, listeners can make their voice heard right now by texting us on 53955 or calling us on 309-3879. But I kind of... there's a little bit of time here. I kind of want to talk about your thoughts on yesterday's News Hub debate, leaders debate. What do you think? We talked a little bit about that off air, but...
I think it was very different to the first one. A lot of people have been saying Judith or Jacinda won, and as I was reading an article, no one really wins these debates. It's never completely one-sided. And I think the difference between this debate and the last debate was that in the last debate, both Judith and Jacinda had some energy, but it was quite flat at times.
Quite defensive.
Yeah. Whereas this time round, either Jacinda really shone or Judith really shone. They had their strengths and they really played to them. And when the other one was playing to their strength, you could see that they were struggling to keep up. I'd have to say that both of them really brought in a lot of charisma this time as well. There was definitely points where you could say, wow, I could definitely see either of them as Prime Minister with some of the stuff they were saying. And it's good to see that there's also a lot that they're agreeing on. There was stuff around sanitary products for women was something that they agreed on. Trying to remember what else there was, but there was a number of areas where they did agree on, and I think that's something that's really positive when it comes to how our country is run. It's not complete defiance.
I kind of want to talk a little bit about the format of the debate. Yes, it is more engaging than the TVNZ one, but I think at the later rounds, I'm not doubting on Patrick Gower's ability to moderate the debate. I think he did a fantastic job. I think the later stages of the debate, especially for quick fire rounds and at the last part, which is the post-debate analysis, I think it's quite trivialised. As Jacinda Ardern said to herself, it looked like much more of a pub quiz rather than a proper debate on policy. And I agree with that. Took the seriousness out of this and made it more like, I feel like watching a live game of football rather than a serious debate between two people who will be leading our country.
I think it's definitely an interesting way to go because, I mean, there's been lots of discussions for years around whether journalism and at what point does it become a form of entertainment? When does news become entertainment? And I think it's interesting because me and you sitting here, we engage with the news on a constant basis. But for someone sitting at home who might not necessarily watch the news all the time or not necessarily know what's going on all the time, I think this format would have really worked for them. I think it was engaging enough that someone who was new to politics would be able to understand what was going on while still getting the information they would need to make a decision if they went off and did a bit more research. I think it was more of a casual format, but I think that was needed to capture a number of people's attention who might not necessarily engage with a more traditional format. Yeah.
Yeah, but let us know if these kind of formats, quick fire rounds, or maybe I remember Patrick Gower asking which tree they could relate to. Yeah, I think so. Do you think these questions could attract you to pay attention to politics a little bit more? But on the flip side of things, the US presidential debate, my God, that was a disaster.
I think it was much
name-calling, personal attacks. Yeah, but I must say the debate later is much more refreshing.
Yes.
Much more civil in a sense, even though I kind of think it trivialized a little bit. It's much more civil.
Apparently, after the US debate, I think it was something like there was a 400% increase in the number of searches on how to move to New Zealand from the US, which I don't think it really surprises anyone. I think definitely looking at Twitter, whether you were a Trump supporter or a Biden supporter and undecided voters, someone overseas watching it, It really drained everyone, and it didn't leave anyone feeling confident about what the US is going to look like through their next term of government, really.
Especially when the debate, the US one yesterday, hasn't focused much on a lot of issues that I think, judging on social media, that the American people wanted. They wanted a plan how to get out of the recession, a plan how to eradicate the virus or any other ways. But for a lot of times, the president only resorted to attack Joe Biden on his family on the conspiracy theories related to his families and other, I would say, meaningless stuff that belonged to at least 4 years ago, fake news and everything.
I think that's one of the things that we've seen in both the US and the New Zealand elections. I think there's a huge amount of pressure across the world for someone to have a plan. No one really seems to have a plan. We had this in the first New Zealand debate as well. There was a number of times where they just got asked, do you have a plan? What is the plan? Because they can say they have a plan,
but not give any details,
and not people want to see at least like a step-by-step, or say, we're going to do this in the first 90 days. We're going to do this by the end of the first year. We're going to do this by the end of our second year, end of third year. That's what people want to hear, because it's clear. But politics is never that clear, unfortunately, and that's really hard to translate, especially in a debate where you're having to memorize these sort of things and react on the spot to what you're being asked by the moderator.
Let us know more of your thoughts on these two issues, the US debate or the New Zealand leaders debate. You can do so 5395 by texting us or call us on the phone right next to me. Well, between me and James in the studio on 093879. The time is 22 minutes to one. We will go for another break, but here's Nadia Reid with Over Canada.
you hold me in the darkness? Would you tell the world my name? Oh, I'm reaching out for something. God is on our side. I wanna feel good again.
Justin Wong. It's Overseas Experience, your international news update on 95BFM.
Welcome back. More than 100 Armenian civilians and combatants were killed after armed hostilities were renewed with neighbouring Azerbaijan around the mountainous region of Nagorno-Karabakh. Fighting broke out on Sunday as Azerbaijani forces were trying to capture territories in the Karabakh regions that were held by an ethnic Armenian majority. This conflict could be traced back to early 1920s, to the beginning of the Soviet Union. Despite Karabakh was controlled by ethnic Armenians that are majority Christian, the Soviets included it to the boundaries of the Soviet Socialist Republic of Azerbaijan, which is made up of majorly Azerbaijani Muslims. But as the Soviet Union started to collapse at the end of the 1980s, ethnic tensions between Armenians and Azerbaijanis escalated to violence, with acts of ethnic cleansing being committed by both sides. Following the official dissolution of the USSR in 1991, Karabakh declared its independence as the Republic of Artsakh in December, with the intention of reunifying with the newly independent Armenia. Despite this, was rejected by the also newly independent Azerbaijan. A full-scale war broke out between Armenia and Azerbaijan between 1992 and 1994. Resulting in Armenian forces fully controlling the region and drove Azerbaijani troops out of Karabakh before a ceasefire brokered by Russia was signed in Bishkek, the capital of Kyrgyzstan, in May 1994. Under the ceasefire, Karabakh is governed by the Republic of Artsakh and remained independent from Azerbaijan, but it legally remains part of Azerbaijan, and the self-declared republic is not recognized internationally. A long-term peace treaty was never agreed, despite negotiations mediated by the Minsk group of the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe, which is an international body that is chaired by France, Russia, and the US. So far, both sides have blamed each other for instigating the latest violence. Azerbaijan's president, Ilham Aliyev, had said their forces will keep fighting until Armenian soldiers leave Nagorno-Karabakh.
Armenia was the first to fire, and the first to die were Azerbaijani servicemen. Azerbaijan gave a decent response to the enemy, and the enemy could not move an inch.
Armenia has declared martial law and total military mobilization on Sunday, with Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan telling Al Jazeera it was Azerbaijan that first started the attack.
Our task is to defend, because Azerbaijan launched an attack in the direction of Nagorno-Karabakh, and obviously the very first task of the Armenians of Nagorno-Karabakh is to defend against this aggression.
Armenia has also accused Turkey of sending mercenaries to back Azerbaijan and shooting down one of its fighters. Pashinyan has also called for Russia, who Armenia has a security agreement with, to take all measures of support.
Russia has, with Armenia, commitments in the security field, to be precise, cooperation in the security field. And that is one of the items in our agenda.
So far, international bodies and foreign countries have called for both sides to stop any armed conflict. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called on the parties to immediately stop fighting, de-escalate tensions, and return to meaningful negotiations without delay. However, despite these international pressures, both Armenia and Azerbaijan have refused to negotiate. Turkish President Recep Erdogan has backed Azerbaijan and demanded Armenia to put an end to its quote-unquote occupation of Karabakh.
I condemn once again Armenia, which has attacked Azerbaijan's territory. Turkey will continue to support its friend and brother wholeheartedly and with whatever means are possible. It is time to end the crisis in this region. This region will once again have peace and calm following the swift abandonment of all Azerbaijan's territories. Any measures or propositions beside this will be unfair and unjust.
Russia, who, despite having a security agreement with Armenia but also supplies arms to Azerbaijan, called for Turkey to bringing the clashes to an end, with Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov saying Moscow is categorically against any statements about some kind of support and military activity because it would only add fuel to the flames. Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron has said Erdogan's comments were reckless and dangerous, and Turkish involvement in the conflict would be unacceptable.
At this stage, I remain extremely cautious, but we know it's an extremely volatile situation. That said, I have noted Turkey's political declarations in favor of Azerbaijan, which I think are inconsiderate and dangerous. France, as part of the Minsk group, which requires the impartiality, which explains my caution, remains extremely concerned by the warlike messages coming from Turkey in the last few hours, which essentially remove any of Azerbaijan's inhibitions in reconquering Nagorno-Karabakh, and that we won't accept.
So far, Azerbaijan has not announced how many casualties, military or civilian, it has, but it is estimated to be at a high number.
Overseas experience with Justin Wong, only on 95 BFM.
Yes, and that was international news. We have got a text and it says both Judith Collins and Jacinda Ardern agreed at the News Hub leaders debate that house prices shouldn't be lower. And you have something to say about that, right, James?
Yeah. So I was discussing this with one of my friends because when they both said that, I honestly feel like I have no chance of buying a house going into the future unless I manage to get some amazingly large paycheck somewhere along the way and also have a partner who also has an amazingly large paycheck. And my friend was saying that, well, part of this is that as a 19-year-old, I'm not their main demographic when they're saying that. They're targeting people who have just bought a home, first home buyer owners who aren't wanting to see something that they've put so much investment into start to lose its value. And I think there has to be a real way up between making sure that they keep the value in their houses and those who are looking to buy new houses. And the middle point of that is stabilizing house prices instead of having them go down or completely continue to shoot up.
That brings back to the old question again. A capital gains tax, is that worth it? Now, the Prime Minister said she won't bring another capital gains tax. And I remember another friend of yours had an issue with capital gains.
Yes. Now, I realise that I don't know a huge amount about the capital gains tax, but it is really interesting that the Prime Minister has taken this complete stance against capital gains tax, because from what I understand, it has been a strong Labour policy for quite a while that has been in the running to be implemented by them, and now, as long as Jacinda is their Prime Minister, we're not going to see it be put
at
into
least
place.
Not for the next 3 years, as part of the election process, of this election cycle.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how long either Judith or Jacinda is in politics for, and what it would take for something like the capital gains tax to come into effect.
Well, we will never know.
We won't. Not until the future.
Not until October 17th, at least. So, do vote. And vote in the both of the election, of the two referendums.
Yes. And I think we should also point out that next week's coverage of
yes,
The Wire
I
is...
I completely forgot about that.
It's going to be a biggie.
Yes. So, next week, Thursday Wire will be having our very own candidate debate from the three candidates of the Auckland Central electorate. We have the Greens' Chloe Swarbrick, the Labour Party's Helen White, and the National Party's Emma Mello. All three candidates will be here live from 12 to 1 during the Thursday Wire. So only here on 95 BFM. So stay tuned.
It's going to be a big one.
It's going to be a big one.
That was The Wire.
Ko e rate hotaka katoa mo tēnei rā, that's all for our show today, the 1st of October. Nā te mihi kia koutou katoa I kōrero me kia mō tēnei rā. Thank you to my producer James Sapp and News Director Jemima Houston, as well as for Justice Minister Andrew Little for speaking to us again. And thank you to most of you who tuned in today. Ka hoki mai mātou a te rā wiki. We will be next week for our Auckland Central candidates debate and more of our election coverage, this time on Foreign Affairs. I'm handing you over to Sigrid for the 124 now. Enjoy the sun and the warm weather while it can. Catch you next week. It's going to be a big one. 16 days to go to the election. To vote. Mate wa.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.